Welcome to the Christchurch London podcast. This is a talk from our Sutton service. To find out about upcoming talks at each of our services, or to listen to other talks, please visit christchurchlondon.org.
So if you have your Bibles, or if you look at the screen, we're going to be looking at John 16:33 today. So I'll just give you some time if you're getting your Bibles out. So John 16:33 reads, I have told you these things so that in me you have peace. In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. Now, this is probably not one of Jesus's most popular promises, and it's not something you'd have printed on a t-shirt, but it is one of great importance when it comes to discipleship. We are living in a troubled world and in troubled times, and you only have to just Google search quickly or look in a newspaper or on a magazine, and you will see loads of information, loads of news of suffering. We're bombarded with news of suffering. And I think right now is a good place for us just to take a deep breath and to smile, maybe wusa, because I am going to say the word suffering a lot. And I am going to get a bit heavy and a bit deep. So, you know, you can smile to your neighbour, just know that you're still okay. We're still here together. We're in this. But suffering is something that we are affected with on a daily basis. And it's not so much the news that occurs, the wider world suffering that really impacts us, but the suffering that impacts us in our personal lives. It is always looming, it's nipping at our heels, and sometimes suffering will wrestle us to the ground and barely leaving us able to get up again. Suffering is often where we look hardest for God, but where he is most difficult to find. Today I'm going to look at the reality of suffering in the life of a disciple. And just as a quick disclaimer, Andy already said, but Alanzo Paul is coming next week and he's going to give you the more deeper, you know, apologetics and theoretical discussion of suffering. I'm just doing the light touch today, okay? So just how we're formed by suffering and how we should respond to it. If you want any, you know, deep theoretical discussions, come on next week. What I want to put forward today is that as disciples of Jesus, in order for us to be formed by him, in order for our lives to be shaped by him, in order for us to look more like him, we have to have a deeper understanding and acceptance of suffering. The Christian life is not marked by storybook endings, but by mountaintop and valley experiences. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a 20th century prophet and martyr, wrote in his best known book, The Cost of Discipleship, suffering then is the badge of true discipleship. So the title of my talk today is We Are Formed by the Cross. So formed by the cross. We are formed by the cross and we're formed by suffering. And in the year 2020, for every 800 COVID diagnoses, the Google searches for prayer doubled. Suffering snapped the illusion of control that most of us feel we have over our lives. So for many people, in times of peace, where they found no need for God, they found in COVID times a complete need and they began running to him. But the honesty is that for everyone who ran to God, there was at least one who was running away from God. Away from a God who didn't feel they felt could help them or would help them in their time of need. Now, I grew up in a Christian household singing, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the... I'm not going to sing the whole thing because, you know, not a singer. You were looking forward to that, but nah. And I grew up singing that song, he's got the whole world in his hands. However, as I've grown older and life has lifed me, I have come to... I don't even know if life is a real word, but I made it up. Life has lifed me. And I think what I've struggled with the most in my discipleship walk is this issue of suffering. Not necessarily the problem of evil, but the suffering that seems unnecessary, chaotic, random, profound, unjust. And especially when it relates to my own personal life. Now, I feel I've been well acquainted with suffering. I was born out of suffering. It took my mum 10 years to have me, and she miscarried several times before me and after me. I am her only child. I am now caring for my mum, who's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and my stepdad, who's been diagnosed with vascular dementia. So I am well acquainted with suffering. And if I look back over the past 6 years of my life, I feel like my family and I have experienced situations that have looked like the opposite of what we have hoped for and anticipated. We have been through challenging seasons, and at points has left me feeling incredibly disillusioned. I think of the loss, I think of the grief, I think of the disappointment, I think of the pain, I think of the sleepless nights, I think of the anxiety, I think of the depression, where God has felt completely silent and absent. As a Christian, we're often told, if you just have faith, or if you do good things will happen to you. If you just follow Jesus, good things will happen to you. It will all work out for your good. But what about when it doesn't? How about when the times of suffering just seem so random and unnecessary? When we struggle to make sense of it all? In my short 36 years of life, I have come to find out that following Jesus, there are many times where we say to ourselves, this isn't what I expected. I think as many Christians, we have many misconceptions about suffering, and definitely I can't address them all today. But what I do want to look at is two just key points that I think are important. Questions around why we suffer, and also, more importantly, how do we respond to the inevitable suffering that we will face? One of the biggest reasons why people don't come to faith is they often say, well, if God exists, why is there suffering? In Elie Wiesel's book, Night, which is an autobiographical account of a 15-year-old Jewish boy who is in a Nazi death camp, he describes quite graphically the execution of a young boy who is accused of sabotage. And in this scene, there is a profound moment of just complete silence where they witness this young boy flanked by two grown adults hung by the Nazis. And Elie Wiesel recounts how a man behind him, one of the prisoners, said, "For God's sake, where is God?" And he continues, "Where is merciful God? Where is he?" And Elie Wiesel says he heard a voice within him say, "Where is he? He is here, hanging in the gallows." Now, there are various interpretations of what Elie meant here. But what I see is one scene and two men with two very different responses. One looks at the scene and is ravaged by anger towards God. And the other looks at the scene and rages at a darkness, marveling at a God who would be kind enough to enter in. Often, our perspective shapes our experience of suffering. What we think we're entitled to, what we think God has promised us, controls our reactions and interpretations of the events in our lives. We can't choose whether or not we suffer, but what we can choose is how we respond to it and the story that we tell. Now, there are many different types of suffering, and some may be not as deep as what Elie Wiesel recounts, but suffering always rudely interrupts our own story. Now, I don't know what your story of suffering is. It could be the day that you lost your best friend, or the day that you miscarried, or the day that the doctor said, I'm so sorry, but there's no other way to tell you. But suffering always changes the way we thought our story. G.K. Chesterton wrote, "The worst moment for an atheist is when he is so thankful but has no one to thank." And I argue that the worst day for a Christian is when we go through times of suffering and the God that we have spent so much of our breath thanking, we find ourselves blaming. When we are formed by the cross, we understand that comfort is not a signifier of the blessings of God. Neither is it confirmation that we're in God's will. Jesus was the perfect person who followed God's will perfectly, yet he suffered terribly. Jesus is both the King of Kings and the suffering servant. He is the one who receives the crown of glory, but also the crown of thorns. He is the one who is on the throne, but also at the cross. He holds joy and suffering together. He is just as present in the mountaintop as he is in the valley. So why do we suffer? Alonzo Paul will fill you in on that one properly. But I'm giving you the Catherine Ishola version. And the Bible version. It's the Bible, I promise. In John 16:33, Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and in the last 24 hours of his life, he talks about suffering. And he assures them that they will suffer. However, he doesn't just leave them with this bleak promise. He says to them, I tell you these things so that you may have peace and take heart, because he has overcome the world. God is at war with evil. He is not in collusion with it. God is not indifferent to our suffering. In fact, he hates the pain. He is present in our suffering. It's complicated. Suffering is complicated. It's messy. It's ambiguous. But what is clear is that it was not in God's original plan for us to suffer. And we see this in the Garden of Eden in the book of Genesis. Suffering is a symptom of sin, but not the punishment of sin. Jesus comes onto the scene and deals with suffering in Isaiah 53, verses 3 to 5. And again, if you want to turn there, Isaiah chapter 53, verse 5. And it reads, the NIV, he was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he is despised, and he is held low in esteem. Surely he has took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgression. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. Jesus is born into a time of infant genocide, to an oppressed minority, and to peasant parents. He is born through a scandalous pregnancy and grows up to be a blue-collar worker in a rural village. He is then executed on the cross like a common criminal outside of the city gates. And I didn't even realize how important being crucified outside of the city gates was. People who were placed outside of the city gates, this is where the uncivilized, the weak, the poor, the outcasts were. Jesus was beaten, broken, bruised so that we can receive healing and salvation. But what we see in the resurrection is that he wins the victory over suffering. Jesus entered into the world and redeemed us through his own story. And this actually isn't the end of the story. He is coming back once again to create a new world where there will be no suffering. In Revelation chapter 21, verses 3 to 5, I'm roaring through the scriptures, but 21, Revelation chapter 21, verses 3 to 5. And it reads, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and will be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. As disciples of Jesus, suffering is not the end. Suffering doesn't win. Revelation 21 is the end of the story, when Jesus returns and he makes all things new. This is the good news. This is the full realization of Jesus' victory on the cross. There will be a day when he comes and he topples the systems of power and injustice that have made so many voiceless and victims. There will be a day when he eradicates and undoes every evil. The earth will be brought back into its order. Our hope will ring out in defiance to evil, in the power of a God to one day bring all our suffering to an end. So I'm going to pose a question. What if why is the wrong question? If God exists, why is there suffering? Or why do good things happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God allow evil? What if that is the wrong question? When it comes to the problem of evil, we often want a definitive answer. But it isn't that straightforward. Suffering is definitely a consequence of disobedience and sin, yes. But that doesn't explain the specific reason why you are going through your own individual suffering. It may be God, it may be the enemy, it may be a myriad of different situations. So what if the better question is what? What do I do now? And so I just wanted to show this image of Jacob at about 18 months. I think it's going to come up. And this is him. I don't know if you can see when he had chicken pox. Now, how many here have had children with chicken pox? It's a deep time, isn't it? It's dark. And I remember smearing calamine lotion all over him, and he looked like a ghost. And he was itchy, and he was in so much discomfort and pain. And I really felt so sad as a parent. I was like, oh, my child, ravaged by this disease. He was so cute, and his helpless little face, he was so distressed by it. And I think to myself, if I had said to him, Jacob, come here, 18-month-old, sit on my lap, and let me give you a deep apologetics as why this chicken pox is going to be great for you in the future. How it's going to create antibodies that are going to assist you, and how it's going to make everything all right. And you having this disease and this suffering, the itchiness and the pain is really going to be great for your immune system, son. Don't really think he would have really comprehended that. And this is similar to us. Suffering is complex. It's not straightforward. And it does a lot of times seem unnecessary. It scars, it wounds, it hurts. And the why doesn't always offer us any more comfort. So what if what is the better question? Because in the reality is we may not always find the reasons why we suffer. And sometimes when we do find the reasons, we might not even like what we find. Instead, what if we turn over our pain and we ask the question, now that this has happened to me, what am I going to do about it? Martin Gray, a survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto and Holocaust, writes in his book called For Those I Loved, and he tells of how after the Holocaust he rebuilt his life, became successful, married, and raised a family. Life seemed to be great after the horrors of the concentration camp. Then one day, his wife and children were killed in a forest fire that ravaged their home in the south of France. Gray was distraught, pushed almost to the breaking point by this added tragedy. People urged him to demand an inquiry as to what caused the fire. But instead, he chose to put his resources into a movement to protect nature from future fires. He explained that an inquiry and investigation would only focus on the past, on issues of pain and on issues of sorrow and on issues of blame. He wanted to focus on the future. An inquiry would set him against other people. Was someone negligent? Whose fault was it? And he would be bettered against people, setting out to villainize or find a villain, accusing other people to be responsible for his misery. And he said that would only make a lonely person lonelier. Life, he concluded, has to be lived for something, not just against something. We too need to get over the questions that focus on the past and pain. Why did this happen to me? And instead ask the question that points to the future. Now that this has happened, What shall I do about it? So in considering how suffering forms us, surely it is more important for us to focus on how we respond to that inevitable suffering. So how should we respond? Rabbi Harold Kushner, I'm coming with a lot of Jewish references here. It was completely by accident. But Rabbi Harold Kushner's son, Aaron, was 3 years old when he was diagnosed with a rapid aging disease. He died after his 14th birthday. And out of his harrowing experience, Kushner wrote the book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And in his book, he writes, I am a more sensitive person, a more effective pastor, a more sympathetic counselor because of Aaron's life and death than I would have ever been without it. And I would give up all of those gains if in a second I could have my son back. If I could choose, I would forego all the spiritual growth and depth which has come my way because of our experiences and be what I was 15 years ago, an average rabbi, an indifferent counselor, helping some people and unable to help others, and the father of a bright, happy boy, but I cannot choose. And to me, that was just so real. None of us want to go through suffering. It's not our choice. We'd rather just forego it. But the reality is that God is kind enough and intelligent enough to mature us in our suffering and as a response to it. Suffering is a place we never want to go, but would never be the same without it. Pain has the unique potential to grow and mature us and deepen our love and dependence on God in ways that we could never imagine. We are able to reach new levels of joy. It's not that we make an idol of suffering, but we rather grow in maturity and develop our understanding of it. A recognition that God doesn't initiate it, but he does help us through it, and he is present in it. It seems bizarre that in John 16:33, that Jesus tells us to have peace and to take heart in the midst of suffering. But there is a greater capacity and a greater potential for love and for joy, even in the midst of our storms. As disciples of Jesus, the first thing I would suggest to do in times of suffering is to find God. We take our disappointment, we take our anger, we take our pain, and we take it to God. In Genesis 32, there is the strangest wrestling match that I think has ever occurred in Genesis 32. For those of you who are Bible scholars, you're all like, yeah, I know this story. Jacob wrestles with an unknown man. And he wrestles with him throughout the whole night until daybbreak, when the man tells him to release him and he ends up dislocating his hip. You can read this fascinating story, Genesis 32. And Jacob realizes that he's actually wrestling God. And when he asks him to release him, when God asks Jacob to release him, he dislocates his hip and he renames him. He changes his name from Jacob, which is deceiver, to Israel, which is strives with God. Jacob ends that wrestling match with a renewed faith and a blessing from God. In the midst of his suffering, he was able to find God. And I would say that this is very similar to us. We need to wrestle in our spirit with God, and we will find him, and he will give us a new name, and he will pronounce a blessing. But also remember that Jacob, for the rest of his life, he does walk with a limp. And sometimes our suffering leaves us scarred forever. We're never quite the same. And that's also okay. In an issue of Christianity Today, titled Thank God for the Bombs. Next picture. If you have seen this famous image, and it is of Fanti Kimfo. And she is somebody who was running there naked at age 9 in pain as she had been burnt all down her back from the bombs that had occurred in Vietnam. And as a child, she was raised in the Chaldee religion. And she kept praying after this attack because she suffered so much emotional, spiritual, and immeasurable pain from this. And she felt that her prayers were being unanswered. And so one day in 1982, she was in Saigon Central Library where she opened up the New Testament. And as she read through the Gospels, she was struck by a suffering God, a suffering Jesus. She asked herself, why would Jesus endure so many things if he were not God? She had never been exposed to this side of the gospel or this side of Jesus, the wounded one, the one who bore scars. And she came to believe that he really was who he said he was. And he would do all that he promised in his word. And her salvation experience occurred on Christmas Eve in 1982 when she was attending a special worship service at a small church in Saigon. She desperately needed Jesus' peace, his love, his joy. She had so much hatred and pain in her heart. She wanted this Jesus. And she experienced a kind of healing when she walked down to the front of that service that only could have come from God. She was finally at peace. She says she will never forget the horrors of that day where she ran frightened, naked, and in pain down that road in Vietnam. But her faith in Jesus has enabled her to forgive those who hurt and scarred her. Today, she gives thanks to God, even for those bombs, and especially for that road. God has a preferential ear for suffering. He really does. Number two, so we find God. I think the next slide, we find God. And number two, oh, look at my number one. This is what happens when you make a PowerPoint in the late night. Number two is you get into community. Now, this is a good plug for a community group. We are called the Best Connect Community Group. Now, if you want to be in the best community group, you know, get involved. But you join a community group. And Femi always says, oh, we need to find people that we can do life together with. And you find people that you can do life together with, or, you know, you find people that are your tribe. We don't usher or whisk away the suffering. We don't usher or whisk away the pain. It often makes us want to retreat, but we get into community. We plug ourselves around others who we can do life with. We mourn together. We sit together. We talk. Now, being from a Nigerian background, you eat also. You must eat and you must sit and you must talk and you must commune and you go over. And those are the things that I'd be like, oh, this is so annoying. Just want to be alone. But this is what we do. We mourn together. We even have professional mourners, but that's a whole different situation, a whole different sermon. They're professional. This is a real thing. It's a real thing. And as we allow ourselves to open up and as we allow ourselves to do life with others, we deepen our hearts and widen our reach. We find ourselves in our tribe. And I remember, Sophie's not here, when I first came to CCL, now 2.5 years ago, and we were in Bandon Hill. And I'd just given birth to Eden, and I was in a really sad, sad place. It was like the week or two after. And I came to church because I was like, I need to be here. But I really didn't want to be anywhere. And I remember Sophie coming over to me. I don't know what she said, but I just know that she made me feel so loved and so welcome and so comforted that I can't really tell you what she said, but I do know how she made me feel. And that is what community is. So many of us come in and we may be carrying our burdens and carrying our hurts and carrying our pain and carrying our suffering. And then we go carrying this home. And what I really felt God impress in my heart is that as we come here and we carry this to community, that we lift each other up, that we take that shopping bag. I remember going shopping with my mum and she'd go, carry one strap with me. And we'd carry it and we'd half the load, right? I think she really left it with me, but she wasn't pulling her weight. But, you know, we carry the load for each other. We help each other with our load. We should never go back feeling heavier than we came in. We carry our burdens. And number three, We heal the suffering of others. This is a call on us individually and collectively to look out for others and to begin to heal the suffering of others. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 to 4 talks about comforting others as we ourselves receive the comfort of God. In the UK, we are heading to times of uncertainty and cost of living crisis and war and post-COVID life. And there is a great call on us as the church to heal the suffering of others. As the world is anxious and afraid, the church should become the place of refuge and restoration. This is what God has inspired for us to do to help protect those that feel alone, frightened, worried, and abandoned. Again, another Jewish reference, but a Hasidic rabbi once put it, human beings are God's language. God shows his opposition to cancer, to birth defects, not by eliminating them or by not making them happen, by only making them happen to bad people. But he does this by summoning forth friends and neighbors to erase the burdens and to fill the emptiness. We are God's language. So in closing, in this world, you will have trouble. But Jesus has told us these things so that in him, we can have peace. And we are to take heart because he has overcome the world. I really am here to encourage you. It might not have sounded like encouragement, but I am here to encourage you that there is peace to be found in the midst of suffering. There is joy to be found in the midst of suffering. There is hope and comfort to be found in the midst of suffering. This isn't the end of your story. Be careful of short stories. Don't allow the enemy to edit your story. Pain is a part of the package deal of being alive. And lastly, I just want to just to end on this note, is that actually we should remember that God created a world where actually many good things happen and not just bad things. We find life's disasters actually most upsetting because they are actually quite exceptional. Many people wake up feeling good most days. Most illnesses are curable. Most aeroplanes take off and land safely. Most of the time, we send out our children to play. Well, when I was growing up, I don't know about now. And they come home safely. The accident, the robbery, the inoperable tumor, or the life-shattering or the life-changing instances are exceptions. They are rare exceptions. When you have been hurt in life, it may be hard to keep this in mind. And when we were standing very close to a large object, all you can see is that object. It's only when you step back from the tragedy that you can see the rest of what is around it. Only with time and distance can we see the tragedy in the context of the whole life. Keeping one's eye and mind on what has enriched you is more important than what we have lost. And I just ask that you stand up and the band come. And I just really want to pray with us today. I think for many of us here, we come in and we have come into community, but we also don't know what each other are carrying or what burdens that we feel we've come in with. And I just really believe by the Spirit of God today that he has come to lift burdens. He has come to bring peace in the midst of the storm. He has come to bring answers to those questions that you have cried out and prayed to him. He has come to heal scars and wounds. He has come to lift burdens. He has come to bring hope and joy in the midst of our suffering. And just as the band play the last song, I just want to encourage you to cry out to God. I want to encourage you to bring your hurt, to bring your pain, to bring your disappointment, to bring all that you have come in with and leave them at the feet of the cross. So I'm just going to pray. I'm going to let the band play. And I just want to encourage you to have that time with God. Father, I just pray for every single person here. I pray that you just heal every scar and every wound. I pray that you minister deeply to our hearts. And that you lift every burden. That we hand over our burdens to you and that you just minister deeply to us. Bring us joy. Bring us peace. Bring us wholeness. And even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that you still prepare a table before us in the presence of our enemies. That you be with us, Lord. That you comfort us and that you heal us in the name of Jesus. Amen.